You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's the Fight In. It's the Fight In. It's the Fight In. It's the Fight In. Cock!
A camel turnip!
Hello and welcome to the Fighting Cock podcast. Today I'm joined by Felonious Fuel. How you doing, boy?
Good evening, good evening.
We've got John Bass, who's just freshly returned from Paris, gay Paris. And as a man who is staunchly defensive of, you know, Britannia, how have you found the last few days in France?
Yeah, it was all right, mate. Glad to be back in our blighty, put it that way. Yeah, it's fine. Paris is all right, and it's just a bit, it's not London, is it? Fundamentally.
That wasn't the vibe we were getting in the WhatsApp group. It was like, it's these French bastards, these French, fuck French, France, baguettes are shit.
Loads of white flag emojis.
Yeah, a lot of white flag. There was a lot of angry energy coming from you, John.
Well, I mean, first of all, you can tell that's a lie because there's no way I'm ever turning down a baguette. Absolutely sensational piece of bread. And second of all, yeah, I mean, look, as I've stated numerous times, my one issue with France generally is that they surrendered in the Second World War because they didn't want Paris to get smashed up. So, you know, you just got to question that. You're putting architecture over freedom of Europe.
Indeed. But,
you know, it's been a while, so I've got to let go. I've got to let it go, Flav.
Yeah, you do. You should. You've been watching Masters of the Air?
Yeah, I finished it. Yeah, it's good. Was it good?
Because I thought as a fellow Bretonian that you'd take umbrage of the fact that they didn't mention the RAF once. There was a fucking, like, they must have put millions into that program. At some point in the development of the show, and if people don't realise, this is like Band of Brothers brought forward 20 years, and it's about, you know, the American Air Force coming and saving England from the Nazis in the Second World War. Do you think that at some point in the development of that show, they might have said, should we mention the RAF? Yeah, let's mention the RAF. Let's mention the RAF for 2 minutes and mug them off. That was my issue, massive issue with the show, John. So I don't know why you liked it so much.
Well, I liked it. And I mean, I was annoyed by the anti... It was quite anti-British, if I'm honest, because it was talking about, like, day bombing was really bad. Night bombing was really bad because you're just blowing up. You're not aiming for targets, just blowing loads of shit up, and it's pretty bad. I thought that was kind of rich coming from the country who invented the nuclear bomb and absolutely flattened two cities. So that was rich, one. And two, they were talking about, I can't remember what the actual official name of the plane is, but they were talking about their fighter jets being the best fighter jet in the Second World War. I think we all know it was a Spitfire.
Of course it was a Spitfire.
The Luftwaffe tried to give it absolute big spuds in the Battle of Britain. What did we do? First of all, we went, I know, let's just invent radar. Second of all, we had the Spitfire and slumped them up. So obviously it's the Spitfire. The end.
See, what did Jamaica do in the Second World War?
Helped you lot win.
Okay, good. Good. We'll leave it there. this is the Q&A pod, which means we don't know what's coming up. I'm sure there'll be some interesting questions. John will be getting a mic pretty soon. He's just been in France and he's unhappy. And so if there is a sound disquality, that's the reason why. We'll get it sorted very, very soon. Let's go straight to the questions. Actually, how are you, T? How have you been?
I'm all good. But, you know, I think what everyone wants to know right now is what level is Ford Watch on? And Ford Watch is on 7. Right, before I get that out of the way.
When you say 7. Everyone wants to know, there was one tweet.
Yeah, I've been bombarded, mate. Absolutely bombarded.
One tweet from James Swan.
Mate, my DMs are full. Trust me. Everyone wants to know. Everyone's asking.
People don't know what Fraud Watch is. What is it, T?
Ange Postecoglou is eternally on Fraud Watch until he brings it home. And it goes from a rating of 1 to 10. 1 being not a fraud, 10 being super king fraud. And he's at number 7 right now. But, you know, it'll fluctuate this time.
How do you feel? Jokes aside, how do you feel about Ange Postecoglou? Is it an important question?
I'm happy. I think he's the right appointment, you know, considering what came before him in terms of, you know, personality and just galvanising the club. I'm not sure if he's going to go all the way and get it all done, but he will leave the club in a better state than he found it in. And, you know, you've got to give him a lot of credit for that, to be honest. And I think he said we're a couple of windows off, and we definitely are. I think those 10, 11 games we went unbeaten kind of skewed people's expectations a lot. And I think we are about par for where we are now. So, yeah, it's all good.
All right, let's go straight to the questions. Let's go with Morgan Medjay, who is a staunch Levy artist. He says, did Spooky really say, and I paraphrase, we're the ones that put pressure on the club? No, sorry, Spooky. It's the Levy out lot that put pressure on the club. Not except mediocrity. This is the problem with doing a Q&A. We can't remember context. We don't remember what people have said. I don't think
it's like a WWE call out, isn't it?
I don't think Spooky ever said that. When he said we're the ones, I'm sure he's talking about the fighting cock. I'm also Morgan. I don't think also Daniel Levy is reacting to Levy out as it stands. But I guess from a holistic perspective, that maybe out of the two between Spooky and Enoch out, maybe there is more pressure being put on Daniel Levy than the other side.
I thought that was just to chime in here, Flav. I thought when I listened to that pod, I thought he was referring to we, the fans at large, not either side. Just that when stuff happens, the fans at large make their voices heard and therefore put pressure on the club. I think that's what the point he was making.
Do you think as a fan base that we do put pressure on the ownership generally?
Well, I think that there could be a lot more in terms of, like, we've seen protests at other clubs, right? Like actual protests and kicking off with stuff, and we can definitely do more. But I also would say that there is sometimes palpable feeling inside the stadium about, like, dis-happiness with what is happening on the pitch, and that I do think influences Levy. I mean, I think we saw that clip, was it Donna Cullen, when she sort of mouthed this is shit, and this is under Conte, and everyone was kicking off and they were booing and half time and blah blah blah. That is influencing, that is putting pressure, that is making your voice heard. But I agree with T, like, are we doing enough? Could we do more as a fan base? Yeah, 100%. And then I know what will happen now is that the sort of Levy out type people go, see, like, if you did more, if you said more, if you wanted to do more, that's what it would take. But as, again, I'll only give my personal opinion, everything that I've seen that's been quote-unquote organised is pretty unorganised and doesn't have a single, like, voice or focus. It's all very just, oh, I just don't like Levy, I've got a problem with this. And then someone else will have a sort of similar point, but not unrelated. There isn't a thing that I believe in, I want to get behind. And some of the people that are involved in it, I just don't like them. So I think it's always going to be an issue for us because we don't have this uniting belief of what actually Levy out, quote unquote, actually means, or Enochout actually means, is, I think there's a lot of disparate groups that want that.
Yeah. How about you, T? How do you feel about it?
I don't think we're that sort of club or that sort of fan base to mobilise themselves and get behind one single cause. And that's because our fans don't like being told what to do. I mean, when we did 1882, there were some fans railing against it, saying, why do you want a single game for? Fuck off, I come to watch Spurs. You know, and I think everyone wants a loud stadium, but I don't think everyone wants to necessarily be a part of that. I mean, even with Super League, I've had conversations where people are like, we're going to be in it and it's okay. And there's some people who felt strongly the other way, that we should never be involved in it. So with that in mind, we're never really going to get a united front on getting Levy out. So that's just where I am with it.
Before we move on to the podcast, to give a shout out to Sam Cornish, who before the Luton game is going to be taking photos at the Beehive in support of the Tottenham Food Bank. He wants you to think of it as a family photo with your Spurs loved ones. So if you're a part of a group of fans that want your picture taken as a group of boys that go to Spurs, or boys and girls who go to Spurs, go to the Beehive. Sam Cornish is going to be there with his camera taking pictures. So he just asked us to spread the word and get involved. So what? It's a nice part of your day, isn't it? Going to the watch Spurs playing and have Sam Cornish, who is an incredible photographer, take your picture. Yeah, head over to the Beehive and also donate to Tottenham Food Bank. Boys, have you heard of the rumour that Saudi Arabia, and you say Saudi Arabia, I'm talking about the entire league, which seems to be dictated by the state, but they're interested in Richarlison. It's a couple of clubs that they want to bring Richarlison to. What would you do with that situation? Because Richarlison this season, barring the injuries, has been very, very good. Certainly his statistics have been sensational. What do you make of that situation where we can generate a transfer sum that is more than he's worth? John, what do you think?
Well, I think this is going to sound pretty obvious. It all depends on who we can bring in instead, right? Like if there's this mythical player we all keep saying we need to upgrade Richarlison for, but like when you try and name it and people just go, oh, like Osimhen or someone like that, who we probably won't be able to get. So it's kind of like, well, yeah, it would be great to get a big fee for him. And yeah, it would be great to upgrade him. But I just don't see like an obvious answer to who that is as a player that we would get that would make that much of a difference. Now, I know the one name that's been floating around is like Ivan Toney. We were even talking about it earlier on our WhatsApp group. And yeah, there's definitely an argument for that. I guess like outside of the talent situation, he's a bit of a prick, which could be a bit of an issue, right? And
this is the thing, John, is it that he's among the best number nines in the Premier League for sure. But he's a dickhead.
He's a dickhead, and that could bite us. And like I said earlier, it reminds me, I mean, they're quite different people, but it reminds me a little bit of like Adebayor, who was also one of the better strikers in the league. He came in and he did pretty well, and I think even Toney would do pretty well for us. I think he would score goals. There's always just that worry, like with Adebayor, that eventually something happens, there's a falling out, it causes issues, and that causes problems within the squad. And if you remember, that was like quite a big issue with Adebayor. And it took a lot to unpack that. And yeah, we started playing Kane, which actually ended up quite good. So maybe we should sign even Toney, and then hopefully we unearth some sort of gem from the youth academy.
That is an interesting parallel, though, isn't it? Because Adebayor came in without the support of the fan base. And we were in a situation where I think all of us understood we needed Adebayor. But Ivan Toney is a different... It's a different conversation. Like the way he's treated Brentford and the way Brentford hold him up as some sort of incredible, you know, like a pariah. It's sort of frustrating, I think. Like if I was a Brentford fan, I'd be frustrated by the way Ivan Toney has talked about his football club. And he just doesn't give a shit. He does not care. And like, you know, there's something in that as well. But if he can talk about Brentford and the way he has, and he's also talking in about the next window and talking about Real Madrid coming in for me, what's he going to do with Spurs in 2 years if he scored 20 goals a season? Like, how is he going to treat Tottenham Hotspur if that was even a reality? Would it be worth the 40 goal, the Premier League goals he might score in the next 2 years if he was going to mug us off?
I think the Real Madrid comments were tongue-in-cheek, and a lot of his comments seem to be tongue-in-cheek. He seems to have that sort of rascal humour about him. But I think Postecoglou, I'm almost calling him Pochettino for fuck's sake, Flav's having off on me. Postecoglou has kind of a no-dickheads policy.
Why are you throwing me on the bus? Why are you throwing me on the bus?
You forget names.
No, I know I do, but if you do, it doesn't mean just go, yeah, just fuck Flav, let's get him.
It's like that 50 Cent meme. What did he say fuck me for? But but Postecoglou, I think he tends to weed out the dickheads from, you know, when he tries to court players. And if Tony does join us, then he would have actually passed that dickhead test, so to speak. And I'd imagine Madison will probably put a word in his shell as well about him. I'm in a similar position to Flav. I'm not terribly fond of him, but I think if he's holding up our shirt, then obviously he's passed the test, so to speak.
If we signed him for £80 million, which is about what it might cost, would you be happy?
I wouldn't be over the moon at us spunking that much money on him, but once they join and they score goals, you forget the fee anyway. You only remember the fee if they're totally shit. He knows the league. As I said, he's been in England camps with Madison, and Madison will know that. We'll know what makes him tick, you know, how to set him up for goals, etc.
Let me pose a question, rather. If you could spend £60 million on Ivan Toney and acquire him, and you know that he's Premier League based, or you can spend £80 million on Osimhen with no real conclusive evidence that he will be able to perform in the Premier League, what would you do, T?
You know what? I'd probably roll the dice. Normally, I'd be go over my head and get Tony, but roll the dice, man. Roll the dice. It could be exciting.
T, John, what do you think?
Well, the original question was about Richarlison. So, in this scenario, have we sold Richarlison? If so, how much for? Because then it's not 80 million, is it? Or 60 million? It's whatever the fee is minus what we've managed to get back for Richarlison. So, like, if we're talking about what, 30, 40 million? Is that what they're going to offer us for Richarlison? Or are we expecting to get our money back on him?
More than that.
I don't think Saudi League has got that much money to spunk that cash in them.
Why do you think that? Surely their entire model is based on an abundance of money. They're not going to come from Richarlison. Do you imagine like the shake of hoping shake?
Just is a shake.
Is the right terminology, but Salary again, and we can get Richarlison on a bargain, get him in for 40 mil. No, they've got to pay. They're going to pay obscene amounts, surely. Otherwise, we're not selling. Their entire position in the football market is we will pay more than anybody else because we've got nothing here in terms of football heritage.
I don't think they're still doing that though.
Then they're not going to get him then. Like, they can fuck off.
But then
pay more.
But then if we're not selling, so this is the question: if we're selling him for 60 and you're buying Tony for 60, then essentially you're getting Tony for nothing, right? Which is fine. I'm happy to take that. And then you're spending another 20 million to get Osimhen. In which case, go for Osimhen and see how that plays out. I agree with you. It's just much more exciting and much more fun. If you're only getting like 30 mil for Richarlison in this fictional world, right? Then maybe you go for Tony because actually you want to speculate a little bit more sensibly and you want to be a bit clear. So it just depends what this offer is, because I think basically Richarlison would be fine. Like, if we can't find another alternative, no one comes in for him, I think like it's okay. But I do think there are better players out there, and it just depends on how much we get for him and who we could bring in. So, but yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. But I think fundamentally Tony is a better striker than Richarlison, and if we had the opportunity to get him for not much money, you know, if you were able to sell Richarlison, I think we have to seriously consider that. Like, the personality thing is a big thing, clearly. And like T said, ultimately, if we sign him, it's because Ange okays it. And so if he okays it, then I think we have to back him and trust him. But he does improve us. And like, I think we have been, as a fan base, guilty of like sentimentality, and we want nice people, we want nice lads. It's like, but that hasn't really worked out for us great in the past. So maybe we just need a bit of a bastard.
Could you imagine a room though where Ange Postecoglou walks into and Ivan Tony walks into, and they talk about what Spurs could be going forward, and anything that Ivan Tony could say would convince Postecoglou to sign him? I just cannot see it. Because that would be Postecoglou. But wouldn't that be Postecoglou removing himself from his ideas of what Spurs and what his football is? Is he going to say, all right, you're a cunt, you're a dickhead, but you're good at scoring goals, so I'll play you? I can't see it.
I feel that Tony's aims would be, you know, individually based more than the team. And if Tony scores 25 goals next season in all comps, for example, then Spurs will be in the top four, in my opinion, at least if he scored that many goals. And that's probably where, obviously, Postecoglou would rather win a trophy. But if Tony says, you know what, man, I want to be the best striker I can be, I want to score 25 goals, I want to be spoken about in the same breath as Harry Kane, I want to, you know, I mean, all these sort of things may not be growing Spurs as a club, but if he hits those goals, hits those targets with more ammunition got into him, then we benefit too.
So yeah, but Postecoglou is not pragmatic in our ability to defend. So why would he be pragmatic in our ability to sign that number nine? Like, it doesn't give, like, his ideas are his ideas and it's set in stone. I can't see him moving away from those ideas just to sign Ivan Tony. If Ivan Tony says the wrong things, it might be that he says all the right things and he goes, actually, yeah, no, he is the guy. But if he's not willing to be pragmatic in his style of play, he's not going to be pragmatic in his signing of footballers.
I think that is fair. And I guess it's the classic case of all we ever see is small snippets of Ivan Tony saying mental shit, because that's what makes like the media makes things interesting. We don't actually know what he's like as a bloke or as a person. I agree with you. Stuff he says about Brentford is just disrespectful. I don't think that's a context thing. I think that's pretty out of order. That being said, though, like, to give him the benefit of the doubt, and again, just to play devil's advocate here, is that because he genuinely thinks he should be playing at a better level and he wants to do that? And we've had other players who've played at a lower level and have come to us have obviously felt like we are a higher level to the club that they've left, and they're happy to be here. And we all forget about the fact that they've like moved on from these clubs because they wanted to go somewhere else. We don't know that when he's talking about, I want to play at a high level, he isn't talking about clubs like Spurs. And if he was to sit down with Ange, he'd say, look, I want to be, like T said, I want to be one of the best strikers in the country. I want to be one of the best strikers in the world. I think I can do that at Spurs, and I want to be here, and I want to prove it, and I want to help this club to win things. The reason that I'm arrogant is I just believe in myself. Like, I think he was at Peterborough or somewhere like pretty shit like that, and he's got to the point now where he's like getting England call up. You don't get there by not believing in yourself and having a little bit of like that streak, especially as a striker. You've got to have that little bit of belief. So I think there's a fine line. If he talks about what he wants to do and it comes across with ambition and drive and determination and focus, I think Ange will fucking love that. Ange's philosophy, like he says a million times, is I want to win, mate. That's what he always talks about. It's not about playing nice football and attacking football. He wants to win. And if a player comes in and goes, oh, I also want to win. I want to win. That's why I need to leave Brentford. I'm not going to win things there, but I can win things at Spurs. So, like, give me the opportunity and I'll show you. If that's how he comes in, that does fit Ange's criteria. And then maybe we just have ourselves a really good striker who can actually take us to the next level.
I'm with you. Get him in.
Get him in. I mean, I should be head of his PR. I mean, he's having a PR nightmare. Get me in.
His PR is terrible.
I don't think he has PR. Terrible. He doesn't have PR. He just got him. He's just a bloke who just says stuff. Doesn't think about it.
But get me in. If anyone knows him, I think that's what I'm saying.
Imagine he's just like Ari Gold.
Yeah, he does. Ari Gold. Imagine like he scores 20 goals next season. We Spurs finish fourth. And he's in Ibiza with some bint. And
Ricky's mum.
Yeah, Ricky's mum. He's in Ibiza with Ricky's mum. And someone puts a camera up and he goes, fuck Tottenham. That's not on.
Yeah.
And the risk of him doing that is significant. And not just doing it to Spurs, whoever he joins, because he has this some weird, deluded, elevated sense of self. And I just can't, like, I can't get past that, but you know, it's not my choice. So if he does sign, we'll just get behind him. Hopefully he does get 20 goals and we'll be a better position when we are right now. On Reddit, he says, Greatfish says, Flav, what do you have to say to the person downvoting all of all the responses? Yes, anytime we post a request for questions on Reddit, someone just downvotes everything. I don't know who he is. I don't know why he hates us so much, but he's out there. And I think what I want you to do, Reddit, as a fan base, as a community, find this prick. Find this prick.
Bring him to us.
Let's find out where he lives. Right? We'll find out where he lives. We'll start with that, and then we'll decide what we're going to do with him. Let's hope he's not another podcaster, because that would be properly on top.
Beef.
Yeah, let's not start a podcast war over downvotes on Reddit.
Don't fucking want it.
But if you are doing that and you've got the bollocks to tell me, and you know who I am, fucking WhatsApp me, you dick. anyway, what we got here? Ray's Baxter, he says, why does our team constantly jump from giving a great performance to giving its worst one? Because it looked like Villa was, everyone was having clicking. I'm reading, right? So it's worst one because it looked like Villa was everyone having clicking and at the same wavelength, while Fulham left felt like the 11 players rather than a team out on the field. Can you respond to that, guys?
Yeah, well, luckily for me, I grew up in Luton, so that's perfect. I can translate that. No drama, mate. That's how everyone talks out there. Well, I guess the question is essentially, how come we went from looking in sync, amazing, everyone playing together, looked like we turned a corner, to then just 11 individuals who'd never met before and absolutely stinking the place out? I think because, and I mentioned this, I think, on one of the five statements on one of our Patreon pods before, I think we as a fan base, and I'll include myself in this, we look too much week to week, and we're not looking at big enough picture. And I think like it's, and I understand why we do it, right? Because that's all you have is the next game. But I think you just need to look at like the upward trend. Bad days happen. All the players having a bad touch and stuff like that is just, there's nothing that Ange can do about players not being able to control a ball because they're not concentrating properly. But the bigger trend is that you get less and less of those days if you're moving in the right direction. And I think generally speaking, like T said, we're pretty much on par for where we should be given the quality we've got. And I'd actually even suggest we're a little bit ahead of plan in terms of where we should be and the fact that we're so close in touching distance with the teams at the top of the league. So, yeah, I guess my view is like it'll happen and it'll happen again between now and the end of the season. Don't worry about it. The trend is in the right direction. Things are moving forward like well. And individual games, sometimes we'll lose and we'll play shit, and sometimes teams will play better. And Fulham just played better and we didn't play very well, so we lost.
So that point, it says, why do you think Spurs seems to be the only club in the league that can't just have a bad day at the office? New manager, rebuilt team, heavy injury and international duties disruptions during the year, and instead of Fulham just being a bad day of the office, our manager is naive, our players are complacent, and the club isn't a big club, etc., etc., T.
Should get him on the pod. It's quite insightful.
Spooky, innit?
Probably is it. one of his aliases. I don't know. I mean, I've been supporting Spurs a long time. I know that these things are going to happen. Marco Silva is actually a very, very good manager. They've beaten Arsenal at Craven Cottage, I believe, and West Ham and Brighton. So they've got some scalps at Craven Cottage. It's not an easy place to go. I mean, I'm not excusing the 3-0 defeat. You know, we're clearly better than that. But, you know, I don't think you can really judge our season based off that game. We've seen us at our best. We've seen us at our worst. And I think where we'd like to land is nearer to our best than at our worst. I don't think we're going to be playing like that every single week. And, you know, it's almost like supporting Spurs is like two separate entities. One is the 90 minutes we play, where we back our team, sing songs, whatever the fuck. And it's the rest of our lives where we're probably having banter with mates who follow other clubs. And maybe after the Villa game, some people went a bit too hard. And then they've kind of, you know, had to eat humble pie after getting battered by Fulham. So they're probably taking it out on other Spurs fans. And maybe should just shut the fuck up. That, you know, I mean, that might help you.
That'd be a great rule of thumb generally, though, is it? From all of football fans, not just Spurs fans, football fans across the board, on the overlap, on fucking Twitter, everywhere. If everyone just sort of just take a moment and thought, I'm not going to tweet that, I'm not going to say that, I'm not going to, you know, that you know, it'd be a lot easier for just to follow your team play. The WhatsApp groups get muted. That'd be so much easier. I've got a question here from Coco Longnose. He says, is Bentancur our six for the future? While I have no issue with the quality of two quality eights, Sarr and Bentancur, I can't trust Bissouma at this point. What? So Bissouma's like, and I agree with it, and I understand it, he's come under scrutiny. I mean, he's been under scrutiny for like 4 months, 5 months, and preceding the 2 or 3 months of good form that he had at the start of the season, he wasn't played by Conte. Do you look at it and go, maybe Conte was right about Bissouma, that he isn't the six we thought he was, that the heights that he reached at Brighton were never going to be able to maintain at a club like Spurs?
I don't know. I don't want them. It's easy to be hyperbolic when players are at their best or at their worst, you know? Madison's not playing well, for example, at the moment. And people are saying, well, maybe we don't need him. When we know Madison's better than that. We know Bissouma's better than that. And right now, Bissouma's at a very, very low ebb in terms of his credit with the fans and his form on the pitch. I would like to think that what he did at the start of the season wasn't a fluke. But I think the next couple of windows, it's going to be pretty... I think we're going to see a big head go. We're going to see a big player go. I think it's almost like you know, you go into a prison, you smash up the biggest country, you know, get respect amongst people. So it's a bit like, you know, if you manage a club and you're new, you know, get rid of a big head, get rid of a big person and just show that you mean business. And maybe Bissouma might be the one because...
If someone was coming into the Fighting Cock, which who would he have to smash to get some sort of recognition?
Obviously, John.
Yeah, smash John's face in.
I mean, he could try, but, you know.
Yeah, if he did, though, imagine if he did. That would never be able to look at John in the same way again.
I'd burn my mic. I'd burn my mic if that happened.
Any budding podcasters out there want to try it, like, be warned.
Bring your fucking dinner.
Yeah, bring your fucking dinner, you mug.
Question from Mr. Gad4. He says, come across my collection of the Fighting Cock fanzines from back in the day. They're works of art. Would you guys ever consider doing them again now that you're bigger than ever? Even like an annual edition would be great. Downvoted. That was by that. Whoever it is that's downvoted. Downvoted. Zero Reddit credits. Whoever it is. Upvotes. Would we consider it? No, I don't think we... I mean... We produced those and we did five issues, and it was really difficult. It was difficult to produce them in the first instance because you're dealing with 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 writers. Also, you've got to deal with printers. Then you've got to distribute them, and then you sit back afterwards and look at why you did it, other than the sort of, you know, the kudos of doing it and producing something that's really good. You look back and think, I've made sometimes, actually on episode issue 4 we lost money because of the gold print, the gold leaf on the front. Had grand ideas without any kind of economical basis of why we were doing it, so we walked away from that entire thing. It was, you know, despite it being a decent thing to do, with nothing out of it, which is fine if it's a passion project, and it can be a passion project to the point where it's no longer fun. And that's what happened basically after 5 issues. It wasn't fun anymore to do, and like I say, in moments cost money. So yeah, I think that's it for that. Fake Nate says, now that we're a few days removed, was Fulham's loss as bad as people were saying it was? I thought that we missed a few sitters on another day. We could have won the match, T. It was bad. It was really bad. I'm not defending it.
I only watched the first half, so I thought we could have won. I'm sticking to that. I think actually in the first half, we were probing, and I thought, you know, we can actually smash these cunts up. You know, we were opening them up at will. And Fulham scored before half-time, and I presume we went tits up after that. But no result is ever as bad as we think it is. I mean, I'm not sure about you, John, but I know Flav. I know you must have been at your lowest ebb when we lost to Portsmouth in that 2010 semi.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Walking out of that fucking stadium, I really thought my life cannot get any worse. And 3 days after that, the Danny Rose goal happened, okay? So...
Didn't we beat Chelsea a couple of days later as well?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Football, all these things in football are very, very transient, man. I mean, it was a very bad result on the weekend, but trust me, you're gonna suffer through worse, and we'll always come out the other side. So, I mean, it was a bad result, but I think I've seen someone say that we're no better off than when Conte left, and I can't have that.
Yeah, so, what does that mean, T? Where are they coming from? Do you think?
I'm guessing that when Conte left, we were fifth.
No, I understand that. I get the kind of the facts of it. Like, we might be in fifth. The points might have been comparable. But what are they saying? What are they getting at? What is Dave from Peterborough when he's tweeting going, we're no better than where we were with Conte last season? What do you think is going through their minds?
That maybe we're not as good as he thought we were, because we had the unbeaten run. He told everyone that Spurs are going to win the league. He was telling every cunt he'd meet, could we? Probably going for his local Starbucks and probably sending some bird behind the bar, could we? You know what I mean? And now we're at par. He's embarrassed. And what do you do when you're embarrassed, Flav? You lash out. I've done it. If I've been mugged off, I'm like, well, fuck you. And that's what these people do. They get themselves into a bit of a frenzy, and then when they're embarrassed, what do? Spurs are shit. If you like Spurs, you're shit too. I'm like, mate, come on. We're not shit.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. You're right. John, what, like, if someone was going after the sort of false position in their words that Spurs might be in because we're no further ahead than we were under Conte, could you understand their mindset? Or could you not understand it and look at where Spurs are because of the way Postecoglou has had us playing? Like, what is the reality?
Yeah, look, I can understand it, because I think actually the mentality is exactly what T just said. You can't be proved wrong necessarily if you're always going for the likelihood that we're not going to be successful, because most teams don't win the league. Right, like, especially like the last few seasons, it's been dominated by City. Most teams don't win the Champions League. So if you're like, we're never going to win those prizes, you're going to be right most of the time. Like, you just are. So it's a good way to protect yourself and make yourself feel better. Because when people, like, for example, if you set out at the start of the season, go, oh, Spurs ain't going to win anything, when we probably most likely won't win anything because it's really fucking hard to win stuff, you can go, yeah, I told you. It's like, great. Like, you're right. Brilliant. But you feel like shit the whole season feeling like that. Whereas I feel like we could win it. The likelihood is we won't, but I'm happy working towards it and moving towards it and thinking about the potential of winning it. And then if it doesn't, you know, it results that we finish fourth or fifth or whatever, and we didn't win a trophy again, yeah, I'm a little bit annoyed, but I don't care. I don't want to live in a world where I'm right for something that's fucking miserable. I'd rather be wrong in the pursuit of something that's exciting and fun and, like, positive. And I think that's all it is. I think a lot of people have been so disappointed by the club, like, in some instances, absolutely fairly, letting them down. And I think people, like, can be take umbrage with the club for not doing more at previous times. But I think I said this a few weeks back, Ange and this squad are taking the brunt of the previous 20 years of shit from the club. There's no point in, like, lumbering that into them and onto Ange. Because I don't want to be patient. I'm sick of being patient. That's not their fault, though, is it? Like, they can't change anything that's happened before. So you can either be mad at them and be upset with them and say, this is no better than it was under Conte. Or you can let that go, release yourself from the anguish of stuff that's already happened that you can't change, and start again. And if you do that and you just look forward to and objectively just see what's happening, you cannot tell me And again, this is exactly the same with a lot of things in football. Forget the fucking stats and the numbers. Oh, he was fifth and now we're fifth. It's the same. It's not the same, is it? It's not the same. Different set of players, different feeling around it, different songs. We've got the fucking Ange train. We've got Boost Gumps. We've got loads of shit going on. It's much more fun. So just grow up. Honestly, you've got to let stuff go.
Do you reckon we'll ever get to a situation where we can just talk about the football and comment on what Spurs are doing rather than being influenced by the thousands of opinions that we're receiving every day as Spurs fans, as fans of any club? Like, it's almost like you can't just watch your team play. You have to hear an incredible amount of information from people who maybe don't know what they're talking about, and some people that do know what they're talking about, news outlets. Do you think that there'll be a moment where we all, as you know, if you're producing a podcast or if you're writing about football or if you're talking about it, that you just take a step back and go, the noise doesn't matter. What I'm seeing is the most important thing, like fucking transfer market and their player values, or fucking who scored and their values of how well a player has played. Don't we'll ever get back to the day back, way back, where it was just go and watch Spurs play. If we lost, get on with it. Let's have a chat in the pub and just appreciate the fact that there is something in our lives that takes us away from just, you know, the banality of living. Because right now it feels like football is adding to the stress of existing. Is that not true? Am I out of pocket there?
Ultimately, supporting the club is a hobby. I know people want to make it larger than it is, like it's a religion or it's a passion, but it's a fucking hobby at the end of the day. And hobbies are meant to be fun. Having said that, when things are going well, that outside noise is amazing. Yeah, the outside noise is, was the Angels song for Ange Postecoglou, which is now part of our post-game thing.
You're right, T.
So if the noise is bad as it is now, then it's fucking awful. You don't want that noise at all. But when you're winning, mate, I mean, I've seen loads of people say, no, I'm gonna listen to every single podcast after a big win because they want to get as much in there as possible. When it's bad, it's like, oh my God, it's like, the words I've muted on Twitter, man, it just goes up shitloads after a defeat. It'd normally be Ange, Levy, Spurs, Coys. Anything to do with Spurs just gets muted. I don't see it. And I don't know, I do agree with that. Sometimes it is better to be just kind of isolate yourself from that, but it's just so difficult, man.
The thing is, like, just to expand on T's point there, like the beautiful thing is, but I think sometimes people forget, is you can actually have the best of both worlds, right? When we win, jump on Twitter, retweet everything, listen to every podcast. When we lose, you're also in control of what you're doing. So you can just go, I'm not going to look on Twitter and I'm not going to check my groups. And I'm just going to have a couple of days to just take this in. It's just a fucking game of football. It's just a hobby. And if I do that, that'll make me sad. I don't want to be sad. So I'm not going to do that. And people make it as though they're not in control. I can't help it. Everyone's going mad. All these negative opinions. But you're choosing to read them. Just don't read it. But you can take yourself out of that. You can literally have your cake and eat it. You can just enjoy Spurs when we do well. And when we don't do well, take the result and just don't read all the negative stuff around it.
Regardless of what happens,
it's our choice.
Regardless of what happens this season, John, do you think this summer transfer market will be exciting for Tottenham Hotspur fans?
100%.
I think, no doubt.
It's amazing. Yeah, like whatever happens between now and the end of the season, I think we've seen, okay, when Ange's football does click, it's really exciting. We're going to hopefully sign some more players. He'll have more time to get more exciting football more regularly, so we should be more competitive. And he's a nice guy and all the rest of it, and a nice feeling. So it's like, I can only see positive stuff in the future. Don't mean that's going to happen, but at this minute in time, all the evidence is pointing that it's going to be positive. So why would I entertain anything other than that? It just makes me sad. I don't understand why people do that to themselves.
Yeah, like Ivan Toney, potentially Gibbs White. You know, the idea of both those players coming in elevates us. It really does. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we're currently in a situation where we look at our first 11, you think this is quality, but then you see a performance against Fulham and you realise, Jesus, we're not as good as we thought we were. and then you bring players in like Gibbs White have been reported to be interested in, and I can see that happening as a backup to Madison, but also a player who can play elsewhere. But also, like I say, like Ivan Toney coming in as well. This could be like a, regardless of what happens at the end of the season, a really exciting summer. It really could be, and we may well finish in the top four. We may well have Champions League football next season. Anyway, boys, John, T, love you both.
Love you too.
And we'll speak very soon. This has been the Fighting Cock podcast. We may do one on Monday. There's no fucking football, so there's nothing to fucking talk about. But we might tick over and get back to you on Monday. But other than that, we'll be previewing the game that we move into next week. Cheers, boys.
Cool.
Peace. Bye.
Network.